Welcome back to another episode of the Kansas Briefing. This is your host, Speaker Pro Tem Blake Carpenter. Today we have what I would call an interesting program, one that is different than something that we have done in the past. So some of you out there may know my background, others may not. A part of my background, though, is that I am in the Kansas Air National Guard. I joined in 2020 and have been doing drill weekends and other things since. Now, today, we have special guests joining me, and one of them is Representative Adam Turk. He is from Shawnee, which is up in Johnson County, and he has been in the Air National Guard for about 20 years now, and he is on the enlisted side of the force structure. And then we are also joined by the Adjutant General's Legislative Liaison, which is Lieutenant Colonel Keith Marshall. And so we are going to be talking about National Guard things today. So what is the National Guard? What do they do? And, you know, what are some of the things that we're also looking on? What are the Adjutant General or the TAG's priorities? And so we're going to cover all of those things in today's episode. So gentlemen, welcome. Thank you guys for joining me.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. Okay, so let's go ahead and start with maybe just a little bit about your guys' backgrounds. What made you join the National Guard?
Oh, how much time do we have? That could be a long question and long answer. Mine kind of started all the way back when I was in eighth grade, so I don't have a long tradition of military service in the family, but we took an eighth grade trip to Washington, D.C., and when we visited Arlington Cemetery, I remember standing there as a, 14-year-old and just trying to understand everything that I was seeing, and just the impact that had on me lasted through my high school years, and eventually ended up joining the Air Force Reserve while I was going through college. Served in the Air Force Reserve for about 6 years. Did a couple deployments to Operation Iraqi Freedom with that. I was a munitions and weapons troop at the time. So both of my granddads were truck drivers, and when I enlisted, I went to the recruiter and said, I want to learn how to drive a truck. And we looked through the jobs. It was kind of like looking through an ad agency, and he showed me, short descriptions that are going to define your career, and you have to make a decision on the spot. And he said, well, I've got this job where you can learn how to drive a truck and you can build bombs. And I was like, sold, I'm in on that. So I enlisted as a munitions systems technician, did my first enlistment doing that. And I was a traditional reservist. So I was going to college, I was working on the outside. My job on the outside was law enforcement. So I worked for a police department and a sheriff's office in Southeast Kansas, was a narcotic detective down there. And in working narcotic cases, you have to build a lot of information. So I got interested in compiling information, making a clear picture out of information, and basically intelligence type work for law enforcement. Went through some intelligence for law enforcement training and decided that I want to move my my military career in that direction as well. So became a federal air marshal on the law enforcement side, did that for a few years. And then when I moved back to Kansas, that's when I heard about the intelligence unit at McConnell. And so I went and talked to a recruiter there, ended up enlisting as a geospatial intelligence analyst, and did that for a few years, and then commissioned as an intelligence officer.
So what is a geospatial intelligence analyst for those out there that might not know?
So essentially, pictures. Everybody likes pictures, right? Especially when you work with Army folks, they like pictures and videos. And so we are looking at anything visually and trying to build a picture with that. So whether it's full motion video, whether it's high altitude or satellite photos, things like that, trying to build an intelligence picture based on that kind of information.
Okay, fantastic. And you know what? Since we're all Air Force here, let's just go ahead and poke fun at all the other branches, because they're not here to defend themselves right now. So this is going to be really fun. So, all right, Representative Turk, what's your story? How'd you get in? And you've been there for 20 years. So tell us your background.
Yeah. And it's a Colonel's right. It's a daunting question. That's heavy. I'm a product of 9/11. So I watched the towers fall in my history class while I was in high school, along with my classmates. I'm from a small town from Baldwin City, USA, small school. I come from a rich military family background, so I was used to it. I mean, the life was familiar to me. But it took me a few years post high school before I committed to it. You know, I kind of put it off, thought maybe college athletics might work out, didn't. But Uncle Sam was there waiting with open arms, and so I enlisted in the Army. Spent a tour there, learned how to read and write, which was very helpful. At that point, the U.S. Air Force was there with open arms to accept me. I transferred over to the Kansas Air National Guard, and that's where I've been ever since. I'm in the 190th Air Refueling Wing on the south side of Topeka. It's a wonderful little hidden gem in Topeka. And within that unit, I'm in the 190th Security Forces Squadron, which for those Air Force folks, it's one of the rare career fields where you get to learn and familiarize yourself with various weapons systems. So it's a lot of fun. It's a good branch and a good service to be in, good career field. Been there for a lot of years, lots of TDYs, lots of trainings, and several deployments to boot, and it's been a good choice along my timeline, and I can sincerely say I wouldn't be here without them. So they have my gratitude as well. Uncle Sam has my gratitude.
Wow, fantastic. So for me, here's my story. So when I was in college, I had thought about the military. It was kind of there, you know, something that I wanted to do at some point potentially. But what happened was my senior year, I ran for office. So I ran for office in college, got elected in November, graduated in December, and then was sworn in January. So there was really no break as far as going from college straight into this job that I'm in now. And as time went on, you know, it still kind of tugged at me, and I knew that, you know, if I didn't serve, if I was going to be in my 50s or 60s, someday I would regret it. I knew that I wanted to do it, and I didn't want to have and live with that regret. And so as I pondered it and thought about it more and more, I ended up having a cousin who's actually in the Army Guard. He's a warrant officer down in Oklahoma. And so talked to him about it at one point. And he goes, well, you know that if you join the Guard, you can do both, right? You can do like civilian and military. And I was like, what is this magic you're talking about? You know, and so it was great. So I started studying it more, learning more about it. Ended up doing a tour actually out at McConnell Air Force Base with a bunch of other legislators at one point. And at that point, I'd already gone and visited a recruiter outside McConnell Air Force Base, that which is actually down in my district, and took the Air Force Officer Qualification Test. For those out there that might not know about it, it's called the AFOQT, and you can only ever take it twice in your life. And if you fail it twice, well, then good luck getting some sort of waiver to join, but basically you have to pass. I'll be honest, first time I took it, I didn't pass. I studied for it for a month by myself, did not do as good of a job as I needed to. I didn't learn quick enough test things to get through the math portions quick enough, and I failed. And so then it took me about a year and a half to get back on the horse, but I got back on it. And the second time I took it, I prepped for 3 months, got a tutor, studied way better than I did the first time. But I also had an idea of what the test actually was. And so I actually passed it on the second iteration. And then from there, ended up going and applying for the second lieutenant job out at the 161st Intelligence Squadron, and ended up getting hired. As a matter of fact, a little fun nugget is that the commander of the wing out at the 184th at the time was Colonel Venerdi, who is now the current Adjutant General. And so he was also there and helped encourage me along this path. And so I'm eternally grateful for him and also to Colonel Marshall here, because he was actually a part of that, had a role in playing and helping to recruit me to get out there too with a few other folks. So I've thoroughly enjoyed it since I've joined in 2020. And yeah, so just been an intelligence officer. Now I'm a first lieutenant. Okay, so as we look at the National Guard, what is the National Guard? What is the Air and Army National Guard? What do they do? why are they different than, say, a active duty component? Or what is active duty, reserves, and guard? What are those three items?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Like you mentioned, there's three components to the U.S. military: active duty, reserve, National Guard. Active duty and reserve are both entirely federal components. So they're funded federally, they're tasked federally. National Guard is different. It is funded federally, but organized and equipped and overseen at the state level. So we are the only force out of those three components that that is at the state level. Our commander in chief is the governor, unless we're called up by the president. So very unique construct there. And it's really something that I love to talk about with the National Guard, because this is the closest thing to what our founding fathers envisioned a military force would be. You know, when America was founded, whenever we study the American Revolution, everybody talks about taxation without representation, right? That's kind of what all the kids know that they learn in school. But a huge thing was the occupying force that the British troops were, and having to quarter British troops in your homes. And that was a very powerful factor in wanting to overthrow that British government, and then wanting to set up a system in the new government where that wouldn't happen. Regardless if it was, you know, troops from somewhere like Great Britain that's overseas, or even somewhere that is a strong central government, they didn't want that happening. So if you recall, the Federalist Papers were a series of articles that were written by Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, and James Madison. And that was kind of their concept for what a constitution would be, what a government would look like. And they talked about the militia in those papers. And their vision for a militia in those papers was a federally funded, trained and equipped force that was raised from the local community and made up of people in the local community. And because they knew that people could trust their neighbors, right? If their neighbors were the ones that were bearing arms and serving, the people would trust them. But they also recognized that these individual militias were not strong enough to defend this country on their own. So they had to have some kind of federal oversight, federal funding and structure that would make it a relevant force. So that's really what we see in the National Guard today. It's made up of our friends, our neighbors, our community, but then it has that federal funding and we're part of the bigger U.S. military. So it's a great thing to be a part of.
Absolutely. And for those out there that are listening, this might sound somewhat familiar. And if you've ever read the Constitution, this might sound familiar because of the Third Amendment, which would be, "No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law." So definitely, yeah, all the way back to the founding. It's right there in the Constitution as well.
Absolutely.
So, Representative Turk, you have anything on that?
Oh, he laid fantastic groundwork, and all I'll do is add another layer to it. You know, for the last couple decades, I found myself time and time and time again providing information to folks that don't, especially those that have been around for a while, that have seen what you know, the aftermath of Vietnam and the transition of not only our society and our government, but also of our military. And I'm constantly explaining the differences between what the Guard was post-Vietnam or even during Vietnam and what it is today. And I will tell you this, for anybody that's security-minded or they're, you know, has an understanding of layered defenses, I see what the transition of our military has done over the course of these decades, and I really love how they have folded in the National Guard into our multi-layered defense of this nation. I mean, the active duty units, we have become more efficient and streamlined and precise with the units that we have, and when we send them into conflict and we get to a point where we need to bolster them, we've got the two reserve components to choose from. And as being in the National Guard, not only are we the first ones to be called up for an emergency here in the United States, we're also ones that can be called up in times of extreme conflict, like we've seen during the global war on terror. And that what that does is it just it makes us versatile beyond any measure. And just one of the many reasons why we are the greatest fighting force in the history of the world.
Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to actually transition a little bit here. We're going to talk about what the Adjutant General's priorities are for the 2024 session, and then also Representative Turk and I are going to delve into some of the bills that may have already been introduced and have come up in regards to the National Guard and what we're doing to try to do what's called recruitment and retention efforts. And so, Colonel, you want to go ahead and go into the Adjutant General and what his priorities are this year, but also, you know, what is recruitment and retention and why does it matter?
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to start out with what is the Adjutant General? What is the Adjutant General's department?
Absolutely.
Just kind of an overview for everyone. So the Adjutant General is a cabinet official for the governor and wears three hats. So the Adjutant General of the Kansas National Guard, which is the Kansas Army and Air National Guard. The Adjutant General is also the Director of Emergency Management, so he oversees KDEM, and also the Director of Kansas Homeland Security. So those are the three hats that the Adjutant General wears, essentially protecting and defending the state of Kansas. Most of the entities that are non-law enforcement that protect and defend the state of Kansas. So we have our legislative platform, and there's a three primary priorities that the Adjutant General has for this legislative session. One is a few more employees that our agency needs to conduct the missions that we have right now. Two are some policy changes that we need. And then the third one is relating to state confirmation of general officers. So I'll talk real quick about the full-time positions that we need. The threats to the state of Kansas are growing and expanding. Our adversaries are becoming more aggressive on lots of different fronts. We have, you know, concerns on the cyber front. We have concerns on the agriculture front. We have concerns on food security with all the food that's grown here in Kansas and critical infrastructure. So we need to be able to protect and defend those things. So in the Kansas Homeland Security Department, we're looking to add two employees to that. It's a very small department. We ask a lot of our employees there. So adding two would greatly help them be able to help us detect and counter threats that are leveraged against Kansas right now. And then Representative Turk mentioned Forbes Field, our Air National Guard unit here in Topeka. That unit is looking to grow. It's a KC-135 aerial refueling tanker unit, and the KC-135, a lot of those date from the late 1950s, early 1960s. The Air Force is transitioning all of those units to the KC-46, which is the new Boeing 767 refueling platform. And so the Air Force is making its seventh and eighth basing decisions for that aircraft this year, and we're hoping to be competitive for Forbes in that effort. So when that happens, I mean, we're going to get that aircraft eventually. We need to prepare for that. We need to have the facilities that can accept that and everything that goes along with it. So as we grow and expand the footprint on that base, we need more people to maintain it. So we're trying to hire one additional person into civil engineering, which will essentially do maintenance and work orders and things like that on the base, just to keep up with the growth that's happening there. And additionally, we're building a new Joint Forces Headquarters building on Forbes. So their job is growing and expanding. So we need more employees to keep up with that. On the policy side, so a lot of our statutes that govern the National Guard are outdated. On the federal side, everybody is kind of familiar from TV shows, probably the Uniform Code of Military Justice, getting court-martialed, Article 15, all that kind of stuff. So as National Guardsmen who work for the state in a state status, we are not subject to the UCMJ until we're called up on active duty. So most of our people, most of the time, are not subject to the UCMJ. We have in the state what is called the Kansas Code of Military Justice. It's a counterpart to the UCMJ. That hasn't seen a significant update since, I think, 1988. So the UCMJ is updated almost every year. The KCMJ is lagging pretty far behind that. So we have pretty substantial updates just to bring that in line with what's happening federally, you know, over the last 25, 30, 30 plus years. Additionally, the administrative statutes that govern the National Guard are pretty outdated. It still defines an eligible member of the National Guard as a male, So obviously we've had females serving in the National Guard for a long time, and the statute hasn't kept up with that. It talks about things like we have to communicate with the War Department. The War Department hasn't existed for over a half a century. That's been a long time.
Since 1940s?
47, yep. 48. So,
wow.
And that we will communicate with the War Department by telegraph. So,
oh, there we go.
Hey, we could bring both those
things. Hey, we
can
bring them back. Right? Yeah, let's let's go retro.
We can shift it, yeah.
So those are the kind of things that we're trying to update and just bring statutes into, you know, the modern 21st century, if we can.
Okay, fantastic.
And then finally, the last priority is confirmation of general officers. So when somebody is selected to be a general, they go through a very exhaustive process at the federal level, which culminates in Senate confirmation in the U.S. Senate. We also have a law that they have to go through a parallel process here in Kansas that is redundant and repeats a lot of the same things. They have to go through a KBI background check when they already have the federal background check and a top secret clearance and all that. So we're essentially wasting resources by putting people through processes that they're already going through at the federal level. And additionally, we have the 35th Infantry Division headquarters in Kansas at Fort Leavenworth. That is a division that is spread across six or seven states in the National Guard. All of those states contribute officers to that division headquarters, or they have the opportunity to contribute officers to that division headquarters. The two deputy commanding generals are both from states outside of Kansas right now. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for the Kansas Senate to be confirming other states' general officers. So those are the efforts that we're working towards this legislative session.
Okay, great. And what about you, Representative Turk? I know that you're working on a bill. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Oh, yeah. So We just recently, in the last few days, had the opportunity to provide testimony on a hearing in the Education Committee at the House side. And the bill is called Emerge, and it is a master's degree tuition assistance program. It would assist those currently serving in the National Guard to seek higher education. And it is based off of a currently existing program for undergraduate degree tuition assistance in the state. And it is one of our efforts to help bolster our recruiting and retention agenda to help our fellow guardsmen. And I can't tell you how important recruiting and retention is. And this particular bill will help bolster that crucial portion of our force structure that is pivotal in maintaining a cohesive fighting force. So this particular bill, master's degree, so you can imagine at what point in your life you would be seeking a master's degree and to what education level that individual would be. So those folks within the force structure enlisted in officer are the folks that are helping to teach, educate, and bring into the culture, the military culture, the younger soldiers and airmen. So right now with this, I would say global generational shift, but more specifically national and local, where we have a large portion of our population that is shifting into retirement, and the numbers of folks that are leaving are exceeding the numbers of folks that are entering. It's even more important to keep the experienced airmen and soldiers in the service for just a little bit longer so that they can help with the younger ones. And this is just another tool that'll help do that.
And what is the, so we give them master's degrees, the state of Kansas taxpayers are paying for master's degrees. What do the Kansas taxpayers get out of them in return?
Great question. So what this tool will do is it will incentivize the individual to stay in and continue service. So as it sets today, with the passage of this bill, those that apply for the program will commit to another 6 years of service. Now, I will be the first to tell you, after discussions with multiple parties involved, that the 6 years might be flexible. So that being said, this tool is still a very helpful piece of legislation for the Guard moving forward.
And earlier we were talking about recruitment and retention, and right now one of the biggest things is that when we're looking at recruitment and retention, we're trying to figure out how to recruit people, how to keep them in the Guard. And this is so that we can maintain a strong military force, but it also comes down to if we can't be 100% manned within our units here in the state of Kansas, that could have consequences. Colonel, do you want to go into what those consequences might be in the future and kind of where we're at manning-wise and what recruitment and retention looks like right now in the Guard?
Yeah, it certainly impacts, has the potential to impact current missions. Readiness is, you know, a fancy military buzzword for just having the right people with the right training equipment in the right place at the right time to respond to whatever we're needed to respond. And for that, we really need to be 100% in strength and fully manned, fully staffed, fully trained, both to respond to things in the state of Kansas and overseas for our federal missions as well. And we are, between the Army and Air National Guard, in the mid-90s, so we definitely have some room for improvement. And that's not just a Kansas thing. You know, recruiting and retention is difficult nationwide right now due to a wide variety of factors that could be their own podcast, so we won't get into those. But we're not in a terrible place in Kansas when you look at what is happening nationally, but there's still room for improvement. There's still things that we would like to do better. And education is a big piece of that. You know, for decades, education benefits have been cited as a primary reason that motivate people to join the military. And anything we can do to expand that and make education more accessible and more affordable to our soldiers is going to be a good thing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've had the very lucky to have been able to see and be in the service over the last few decades and watch the transition of the soldiers and airmen that are coming in. A friend of mine and I were kind of joking, poking fun at ourselves the other day, telling each other how old we were, talking about the old days. And
well, you look it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. but we were joking, like some of these folks, they weren't even alive when the towers fell, and it just dawned on me at that particular time how fast time has flown by. But what that tells you as a leader, as an NCO, as an officer, is that their motivations for being there are entirely different than yours. And as a leader, you change how you communicate to those that you're communicating to. And this is another example of how we are changing and reorienting what appeals to our the future right here. So this readiness is crucial, and who we're readying now. We need to be steering our attention to them and what they need, and Emerge does that.
Yeah,
that's a great point. And something that I used in my testimony about the bill was a study that I found by the RAND Corporation. And it's no surprise to anybody that good education benefits bring in more people, right? It helps us build our numbers. But what was interesting about it is it brings in higher quality people too. It brings in recruits with stronger backgrounds, with higher test scores that qualify for higher level jobs. And ultimately, we want not just more people, we want more highly qualified people. And that's what more education benefits do, is it brings in those type of recruits for us.
During your testimony, you had a quote, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, and I'm hoping you have it nearby to reference, but that quote really, really hit home. And if you can rattle that off, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, the quote is attributed to Thucydides back in the 5th century. And he said, "The nation that makes a great distinction between its scholars and its warriors will have its thinking done by cowards and its fighting done by fools." And I would say something that sets the U.S. military apart from our enemies is our commitment to education throughout our force, our professionalization of our force, not just our officers, but our enlisted as well. And our warriors in the U.S. military and the Kansas National Guard are also scholars, and we want to continue that.
Yeah, that really hit home for me because I sat back and I thought, well, all my deployments, we deploy, and in the Air Force, we're very unique. We deploy different than the Army. We deploy different than the Navy. We deploy in small teams and units, and we deploy alongside all components, reserve, active duty. And I recall a scenario with some active duty colleagues of mine. who thought they had it all figured out. And then us guard folk who, you know, outside of our careers in the military are lawyers, doctors, EMTs, police officers, sheriffs, the whole nine yards. And we bring an entirely different collection of experiences and knowledge to the table. So here we are overseas in a foreign country applying all these different tools to the job. And I remember listening to some of these active duty senior NCOs and officers in awe over the talent we brought to the table. And I that was when I was thoroughly proud to have taken the guard route and to be able to provide those tools to the war front. It was an amazing opportunity, and I appreciated you bringing that quote to the testimony that day. It hit home.
Yeah.
Well, and I ended up talking to the chairman after that hearing, and it was one of those things of just last week he quoted Socrates on the House floor. So I was like, what did you think of the colonel's testimony in there with that quote? And he's like, oh, I loved it.
Right
so,
up his alley.
Yeah, right up his alley. Didn't even plan that. Yeah, exactly. So it worked out really, really well. But no, so we are unfortunately running out of time. There is one other piece of legislation, but I don't think we're going to be able to get to it today. But if anybody out there wants to go look it up, it's House Bill 2544, and it's dealing with a dual tax credit for companies and National Guardsmen in order to try to also help retention within the National Guard as well. So we're hoping to maybe have that. It got kicked out of Commerce Committee earlier this week, and so maybe it'll come up on the House floor for debate as we move forward. But, gentlemen, thank you guys so much for your time today. Thank you for sharing your insights, your expertise, and your backgrounds. Really do appreciate it. Thank you guys for everything you do. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Kansas Briefing. Have you again next time.